Welcome to Smart Talk. I'm Scott Lamar. Electronic cigarettes were introduced to the U.S. just over a decade ago. Since then, millions of Americans have taken up vaporizing or vaping. The Centers for Disease Control says 2 million middle and high school students use e-cigarettes and that young people are more likely to vape than adults. Research on the health effects of e-cigarettes is mixed, but what is known is e-cigarettes often contain nicotine, the same additive chemical found in tobacco products. We have a panel today to discuss e-cigarettes, vaping, and really I can say that this is kind of something that is new now that it's been about 10 years, but we're seeing trends in this area. Joining us, Erica Sward, Assistant Vice President of National Advocacy for the American Lung Association, Jennifer Hobbs Folkenroth, National Senior Director Tobacco with the American Lung Association, Dr. Jonathan Folds, a Professor of Public Health Sciences and Psychiatry at Penn College of Medicine. He's also the Project Leader and Principal Investigator at Penn State Tobacco Center of Regulatory Science, and Dion Baylor, Prevention Specialist with Dauphin County's Drug and Alcohol Services. Welcome to the program, all of you.
Hello. Hello. Good morning.
If you have a question or a comment, give us a call. 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org, or you can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page on Twitter. We are at SmartTalkWITF. Again, that phone number, 1-800-729-7532. And I should point out, you've probably heard us fundraising all morning this morning. That is a different 800 number. This one to call Smart Talk is 1-800-729-7532. The Food and Drug Administration put out a report a few weeks ago where they talked about e-cigarettes being at epidemic proportions, being used in epidemic proportions by young people. Erica Sward, is that something you agree with, and what do we call an epidemic?
Good morning. Yes, the American Lung Association agrees with the Food and Drug Administration that the e-cigarette problem in our country has become an epidemic, particularly among youth, which is why we've been urging the FDA for years that they really need to take meaningful action. The Lung Association is certainly hopeful that they've gotten a wake-up call with the data that we're hoping to all see soon, and that they'll take some meaningful action in response.
When you say data that we're hoping to see soon, what kind of data are you talking about?
Well, Commissioner Gottlieb has alluded to the fact that data that still has yet to be released by the federal government shows dramatic increases in youth e-cigarette use from 2016 to 2017. One news report put it as high as a 75% increase in 1 year among e-cigarette youth among youth, and that we're also seeing similar increases in other tobacco products as well. So we really recognize that the genie is well out of the bottle, and FDA needs to start to act and to use the tools they have to protect not only kids, but also to make sure that smokers who are ready to quit know how to do so with evidence-based ways.
I want to step back for just a moment. Something you just said that may be a surprise to a lot of people, that we're seeing an increase in regular tobacco usage. Are you talking about just young people? And then I have to ask the question, why?
Well, I think what we're seeing is that while cigarette use among kids is down, traditional cigarette use, we are seeing an increase in cigar use among youth and among high school boys. This is particularly the trend, and that is because, in part, the Food and Drug Administration has been dragging its feet to protect the public health and kids from these flavored tobacco products, just as it has with e-cigarettes. We also know that in Pennsylvania and in a lot of other states across the country, we're not seeing the same type of proven and effective methods to prevent youth use, such as higher taxes on these products being implemented for cigars or e-cigarettes.
Dr. Jonathan Folds, you're a professor of public health sciences and psychiatry at Penn College of Medicine, Penn State College of Medicine. You were shaking your head when mentioned, we wanted to clarify there that we have not seen an increase in regular tobacco cigarette usage, but cigars, maybe even, I don't even know about like smokeless tobacco. But still, and I want to get back to the e-cigarettes that we are seeing an increase in. Why? Why do you think that there are so many young people who are turning to vaping?
Well, I do agree that there has been an increase in electronic cigarette use, and that's set against a decrease in all the other nicotine products, particularly cigarettes. And the latest data from CDC in 2017, only 7.6% of high school students had smoked a cigarette in the past 30 days. And that's about the lowest we've seen. But that's set against the increase in electronic cigarette use. And you asked why? Well, if you wanted to put it in one word right now, it looks like it's Juul, a particular product that has a kind of sleek design. It's a very small product. It's very easy to hide. It looks like a flash drive, so if you see it in somebody's pocket or in somebody's bag or even on a desk, it doesn't actually look like an electronic cigarette or a tobacco product. And that seems to be particularly popular amongst young people. It's popular in adults also, but that's really risen dramatically in the last 3 years, particularly in youth.
Because of marketing? Because it's the cool thing to do, or what?
Yes, definitely marketing. And I think the company admits that when it really started about 3 years ago, its marketing featured attractive looking young people, not kids, but, you know, young people. And with modern social media, it doesn't take much for things that look cool to go viral. And, I think some of the latest data I saw, there was like 2,000 tweets a day mentioning Juul and Juuling. And young people nowadays, they don't even talk about using e-cigs or vaping. They say, I'm Juuling. Yeah. Mm. And when it becomes a verb with the brand name, you know that it's really taken off. So that product, it's got the same kind of style as maybe an iPhone in its packaging and that kind of thing. The people who developed the product had Juul degrees in engineering and art, and so they kind of combined that in the product. It also does deliver a decent amount of nicotine, so it is a highly addictive product, and that's part of it. You hear young people, if you speak to your kids, have you ever heard of a thing called a Juul? They'll say, yeah, everybody's doing it. And if you ask, are they just doing it for fun or are they addicted? They'll tell you, yeah. Quite a few of my friends say they just started for fun, but now they say they're addicted.
What's a decent amount of nicotine?
Well, it actually contains a very high concentration, about 50 milligrams per mil, which is much higher in the liquid in the e-cigarette than most e-cigarettes. That doesn't actually give a very good guide to how much people absorb, but this particular one, even in the patent for the product, they show data showing that it actually delivers into the person's body an amount of nicotine comparable to a cigarette.
Well, okay, how's that compare to a regular tobacco cigarette?
Well, if you want to put it in numbers, when somebody smokes a cigarette, they get a boost in their blood nicotine of about 15 nanograms per mil. An average, what we call a cig-alike, an e-cig that kind of looks like a cigarette, same size and shape without a powerful battery, gives much less than that, very little. And then you get these second generation ones with a bigger battery and a button. They give a bit more, but not as much as a cigarette. But some e-cigarettes and potentially the Juul, there's not much data on it, but potentially the Juul, when they give about as much as a cigarette, and that means highly addictive.
Mm. And we're going to talk about, because we actually have a question from a listener, what's the harm in vaping if the liquid contains zero nicotine? We'll talk about that in just a moment. But Dion Baylor, I saw you nodding your head as Dr. Folds was speaking about the trends in young people. Now, you work in Dauphin County, tobacco and, excuse me, alcohol and drug services. So what trends are you seeing here locally?
Well, you have kids that there are actually clothing out that you can wear that helps kids more or less hide using e-cigarettes or vaping. Also, you have kids that use social media. They may use social media, take pictures in the school of where the vape pen is, and actually somebody will go use it, move it somewhere else, take a picture of it, and put it on social media so they can continue to use it based on just using one vape pen, which makes it a lot easier for them to be able to get the vape pen to different people.
Well, why would they hide it? Is it because you're supposed to be 18 to purchase?
Yes, and because it's not allowed in the schools. We get a lot of cases through the student assistance program in the school of referrals of kids vaping. So what happens is they get a policy violations with the school, and then we have to go out and actually see them and make recommendations for treatment or whatever is necessary to help them.
So there is treatment for those who use e-cigarettes?
We do a lot of intervention work, which is basically doing groups with them to educate them about vaping and what the effects are.
Okay, the effects are, and I want to turn now to Jennifer Hobbs Falkenroth and get back to you on that, but there was a lot of people out there that when this first started back in 2007 here in the United States, this actually has been around since the 1920s, 1930s, but the technology is only and introduced here in the United States has made it much different in the last decade. There were many people who were led to believe that this was a way to stop smoking tobacco cigarettes or stop using tobacco altogether because, as our listener said, there was zero nicotine. Well, we have since found that there is nicotine. In all products, by the way, in all vaping products, is there nicotine?
Most e-cigarette products do contain nicotine,
okay.
And all of Juul pods contain nicotine.
Okay, yeah, you were talking about Juul, Dr. Folk. But so let's talk about that argument, though, that many people used and were led to believe that this is why it was a good thing to vape rather than to smoke a tobacco product.
Sure.
Is it still true?
Well, FDA has found that no e-cigarette has been claimed to be safe and effective. So they have deemed that there has been none identified to be safe and effective in helping people to quit. In fact, more than half of all adults that are e-cigarette users are also continuing to smoke combustible cigarettes. So we are seeing that continuing trend as well. I think it also comes down to the discussion of quitting versus switching. So, you know, American Lung Association really helps to support those programs that are proven effective and FDA approved to really support an individual in their journey of quitting, a comprehensive quit plan that includes both medication and counseling. American Lung Association knows that 70% of smokers, in fact, want to quit, and there are proven effective programs out there that can help them accomplish that.
But one of the issues here, and any of you can weigh in on this, but one of the issues is, as I said in my introduction, as I was researching for the program today, is that the research has been mixed, that you often hear that e-cigarettes haven't been around long enough to provide any real good research as to the health effects, the negative impact or the positive impact that they could have. You agree with that assessment?
Absolutely. I mean, as a fact, they really were, the e-cigarettes of the type that we have now were only really invented in this century. They didn't exist before that. The way we look at it is that cigarette smoke contains about 7,000 chemicals, including dozens of proven carcinogens. E-cigarette vapor, on the other hand, contains about a dozen chemicals, and almost all the ones that you can compare with cigarette smoke are at much, much lower levels, maybe as low as 1% of the levels. And that's what, you know, led some experts who've reviewed this topic to suggest that e-cigarettes, definitely not harmless and definitely potentially addictive, but much less harmful than cigarettes. So, when we're talking about kids, I mean, the message that goes across the board is, if you're not currently a smoker, don't start using any nicotine product, because that's a recipe for becoming addicted. And it's very important that people understand that e-cigs are not harmless. They're just much less harmful than cigarettes. So for a smoker, if you can switch completely to an e-cig, that is a big step in the right direction. But I totally agree with the comment that was made later. Unfortunately, most smokers who try e-cigs, they don't switch completely. They do both for a while. And some do progress on to quitting. Part of the reason we don't have good evidence on whether they help people to quit is because they're currently classified as a tobacco product. They're under jurisdiction of the part of FDA that regulates tobacco products. And that means they can be put on the market without making claims. They can just get out there. As soon as one of the companies wanted to make a claim that it's a smoking cessation device, they would then have to spend millions of dollars in research to prove it. And so they don't. There's no incentive to do it. You can get it on the market. So it's true that we don't have good clinical trials proving that they help people stop smoking. That doesn't mean to say they don't. It just means there's no incentive for the companies to do that research.
Mm-hmm. Erica Swart, and this kind of gets back to one of our earlier questions, but and it is why young people start in the first place. I mean, we talked about how it looks, the cool thing to do, trends, and all that. But from what everyone is describing here, it sounds like there are many people who decided to vape or use e-cigarettes because they saw it as a way to stop smoking combustible cigarettes. I actually never heard that term before, but I'll use it now. Thanks, Jennifer. Combustible cigarettes. So do we have a breakdown of, does the research show of those who do use e-cigarettes, how many do it to stop smoking completely or stop smoking combustible cigarettes, or those that just like to do it?
Well, I think that Jennifer's point before that half of all e-cigarette users are continuing to smoke combustible or traditional cigarettes is the important point here. The American Lung Association recognizes that we shouldn't compare anything in terms of its danger or safety to a regular cigarette. It's the most deadly consumer product on the market. And so what we want to make sure is that we're starting to be able to answer the questions that you've just posed, Scott, because without any sort of oversight from the Food and Drug Administration, a lot of these questions are going to remain unknown. And in the meantime, FDA Commissioner Gottlieb has said, that these are becoming an on-ramp for kids. And that's why the Lung Association has been so adamant in making sure that that we're sounding the alarm that these products need to have FDA oversight. If any product wants to be able to be a quit smoking product, they can go through the pathway to do that. But in the meantime, we are quickly losing this generation to e-cigarette use. And we're not helping a lot of smokers effectively end their addiction for good.
Erica, when you say that there really is no oversight by the FDA, what do you mean by that? I mean, I think about FDA, and I think about prescription drugs that, go through years of research, and, there are many patients out there say, we could use this medication, but we have to wait on FDA. So you're saying that something that there are millions of people putting into their body really has no FDA oversight?
Absolutely none. And unfortunately, while we've continued to see youth use go up, what the Food and Drug Administration has done is to delay their oversight of these products from beginning this year to 2022. And that means that the ingredient disclosure, the impacts on lung health especially, which I think is worth talking about at some point this hour, and some of the other chemicals that are being put into these different products are not at all being reviewed by FDA scientists and experts. They're just being allowed to be sold on the market with FDA just doing some checks on whether or not a kid going into a convenience store is 18 or not.
But yet FDA is telling us that there's an epidemic of young people who are using e-cigarettes. We're going to talk more about this in just a moment. You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk. We are in the midst of WITF's fall fundraising campaign, and I'm joined right now by Tim Lambert, WITF's multimedia news director, who's here to tell you why WITF is so important to you and why you should contribute to WITF today. Tim,
that's quite a build-up, Scott.
It is.
Thank you.
It's an introduction that I'm used to doing. I've been going since 6 this morning. I said to Tim, I'm tired today because I got up earlier than I normally do. Tim had no sympathy whatsoever.
Zero.
What time do you get up?
3:30.
Okay. Well, I
I'm in the office by 4:20 every day.
Okay. Well,
so
just
getting
for
up
that.
At 5. But anyways, this is our fall fundraising campaign, and we have about a little more than 2 days to go. Friday's the wind-up, but we could end it early, but it all depends on you. If you make a contribution right now and help us get closer to that overall goal, and as soon as we hit that overall goal, we will end this campaign. So we have about $40,670 to go between now and Friday. If we reach that number, if we receive all that money by the end of day tomorrow, by the end of day today, the drive stops and we go back to regular programming. So this is a chance for you to show your support for Smart Talk, for the intelligent conversations you hear each and every day about issues impacting your community. There aren't many programs like this on the radio dial across central Pennsylvania. There aren't many organizations like WITF, a locally owned and operated media organization. Show your support right now and keep the service strong and vibrant in the region by making that $5 a month contribution, that $10 a month contribution, maybe a one-time contribution of $365 to signify that you listen to WITF every day. You can do that by going to WITF.org or calling 1-800-233-9483. And I believe we still have some matching dollars left, according to the big board there, from what it says. So this could be a dollar-for-dollar match right now if you make that contribution during Smart Talk. We have a goal of $1,000, $400 towards that goal already, so a great start, but we want to keep the momentum going so we can reach that overall goal of $78,000 anytime to end this campaign.
You know, Tim, I want to remind everyone out there that I don't have to remind them that election is coming up in just over a month. But what I will...
Gee, how did I miss that?
But what I will remind everyone in relationship to Smart Talk is starting next week in the month of October, we start talking with candidates about their points of view. We've invited the congressional candidates, all the candidates for governor appearing on the program, and we're getting them lined up now. And, as I sit here and have an opportunity to listen to where the candidates are coming from every day, I get to see the differences. But more importantly, you, the listener, get to hear the differences between the candidates that are on the ballot in which you get to vote. We know the WITF listeners are informed, and that's very important to them. And this is a way that we continue to keep you informed with something that is important as an election, the midterm election this year.
That's right. And being able to hear the candidates in their own words in a long form interview, 20 minutes, half hour, 45 minutes, the entire show, gives you an opportunity to understand who you will be voting for, who will be making decisions for you in Washington. And if they don't appear on the program, that also gives you a little bit of insight as to, into how they approach things. If they don't want to defend their positions or talk about their positions or discuss the issues, that might tell you something. So again, Smart Talk is one of the few programs that are going to have these candidates on in long form interviews to discuss issues that impact you, and it gives you a chance to be an informed voter come November. If that is the kind of programming you want each and every day, we hope that you will make that contribution now at WITF.org or by calling 1-800-233-9483.
Tim, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again in just a few minutes.
You got it, Scott.
We're talking this morning about vaping, e-cigarettes. The FDA recently came out with a report that said it has reached epidemic proportions amongst young people across the country. Joining us today is Erica Sward, Assistant Vice President of National Advocacy for the American Lung Association, Jennifer Hobbs Folkenroth, National Senior Director of Tobacco for the American Lung Association, Dr. Jonathan Folt, a Professor of Public Health Sciences and Psychiatry at Penn State College of Medicine. He's also the Project Leader and Principal Investigator at Penn State Tobacco Center of Regulatory Science, and Dion Baylor, Prevention Specialist with the Dauphin County Drug and Alcohol Services Bureau. Give us a call, 1-800-729-7532. Send an email to smarttalk@witf.org. You can leave a question or comment on WITF's Facebook page. On Twitter, we are at smarttalkwitf. Again, the phone number, 1-800-729-7532. Let's take a phone call from Matt in Elizabethtown. Matt, I understand that you've been vaping for some time now.
Yes, I have, Scott. Thanks for taking my call. I listen to your show every day. Love it.
Thank you.
I smoked for about 10 years and switched to vaping about 8 or 9 years ago and haven't picked up a cigarette since. And anecdotally, to one of the points I've heard so far this morning, I only know one adult that still infrequently smokes cigarettes, but the other many, many vapers I know switched to vaping and haven't gone back. I truly feel kids shouldn't vape. Just like kids shouldn't drink alcohol, and I think drink soda and a lot of other things that shouldn't be done. And there should be ways we can fix that. One of the ideas I've had is only selling them in the specialty stores. Much like alcohol used to only be sold in state stores, having vaping products only sold in a store that only sells vaping products I think would really help. The shops I go to I know are very stringent about even checking my ID even though I'm 35. So I think there are ways to kind of combat that. I do think the show today should have a vaping advocate on, someone that is from the industry and is intelligent and knows the ways that the industry is helping to work against these things.
Well, let me ask you this. Why did you start vaping? Was it to stop smoking combustible cigarettes? And what do you like about it? I mean, if you've been vaping for 9 years, what is it that you like about it?
Yeah, so I weightlift and I did a lot of running before I was a smoker, and then realized I couldn't bike ride, I couldn't run. When I lifted, it was only for a few minutes at a time, and I'd get out of breath. And I was healthy otherwise, and just thought how terrible that was for me. I had a friend that was vaping; they showed it to me. I tried it, and I probably had one or two cigarettes that week, and then had switched over completely. And within a month, my lung capacity was back. I'm as healthy as ever. I have a physical work that I do, and I'm still able to run, bike, and do all those things without ever running out of breath. So it really changed my life as far as being a smoker, and vaping doesn't affect me in any way that I can noticeably recognize. I get that it isn't healthy to do, just like it isn't healthy to have a glass of alcohol every night. But I do know that it's a better choice that I could be making than having traditional cigarettes.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Dion Baylor, something that he suggested, making e-cigarettes only available for sale at a vaping shop. We've seen they've popped up over the last 5 years or so. In fact, there was a controversy last year. Some were driven out of business because the state of Pennsylvania imposed a pretty hefty tax on small businesses that have vape shops. But do you think that is an idea as a way to keep young people from starting in the first place?
I think that's a good idea, but then you have to regulate those shops, because you can have the shops there and only have the vaping products at that shop. But who's regulating to say that's the only thing that you're doing and that you're actually giving it just to adults and not kids? There are kids that walk into those shops, and some people will serve them and still give them that stuff. So how are we regulating those shops?
Well, if you make the comparison that he did, like with he mentioned alcohol, we do know that the Liquor Control Board, state police, regulate the sale of alcohol to minors. And we've heard that apparently there's not a whole lot of oversight. Dr. Foz, I saw you shaking your head.
Well, if we were going to put one of these products only available in specific stores, it should be cigarettes. There's no point in making e-cigs harder to get while we're selling cigarettes in every street corner. Cigarettes are still by far the most commonly used product by adults in this country. It's about 15-16% of adults have smoked in the last 30 days. They're the ones that are more addictive and more harmful. So we actually need to do more to clamp down on cigarette sales. But I'd like to congratulate the caller. I mean, he did the right thing. He switched from an extremely harmful product to a much less harmful product, and it sounds like he switched completely, and he's already noticed the health benefits from it. And there are lots of people doing that. We at Penn State, we published a survey that included more than 3,500 adults who had completely switched from cigarettes to e-cigarettes, and they said they told stories a bit like your caller, that they feel the benefits from it.
Jennifer, Eric brought up the impact on the lungs. Mm-hmm. And we also know, as we said earlier, there's not a lot of research yet, but what do we know about the effect on the lungs?
Yeah, Scott.
By the way, yesterday was National Lung Day. We missed it, so we're glad we have you here today.
Thank you so much for that shout out. Much appreciated, Scott. So you're completely right. There's much that we don't know. But what I can say is what we do know is the Surgeon General has concluded that e-cigarette aerosol is not harmless. It almost all contain harmful or potentially harmful constituents that are directly linked to damaging lung health, including nicotine, formaldehyde, acrolein. So we know that acrolein is a constituent that causes irreversible lung damage. And of course, nicotine exposure during adolescence can also alter and change the development of the brain. So, you know, these impacts directly that we do know are extremely concerning.
Especially when young people's brains are still developing. So I assume that means this is even more important than when we're talking about the health impacts.
Yeah, absolutely. It has a direct impact on brain development all the way through the adolescent brain to 25 years old. So if these youth are starting, you know, at an early age, let's say middle school or high school, that's several years of damage, direct damage caused to changing of the brain chemistry. So it's problematic.
You know, just the word aerosol mm-hmm. bothers me mm-hmm. because I have to admit that what I think of with an aerosol is what I spray out of the can, mm-hmm. deodorant every morning or hairspray or something like that. And, you know, I know we're not talking about spraying it in your mouth, but just the word aerosol is kind of bothersome. I had a question here from a listener about secondhand vape. Jennifer, what do you know about that? Is it harmful?
So we do, in fact, know that research proves that these chemicals can be identified in the aerosol coming off of the e-cigarette products as well. So, you know, just as they are harmful to the first-hand user, they're found in the secondhand smoke emissions. So we certainly, are very concerned about that.
I had a question from Kit who asked, can you tell me if restaurant and other public places prohibit vaping? Who wants to take that one?
Yeah, they generally do, and I think it's quite right. I think it's become the norm in this country that you have the right to breathe clean air in your workplace, and bars and restaurants are workplaces. Even if the aerosol from e-cigarettes is less harmful than cigarette smoke, nobody wants to have to breathe other people's stuff. And some of these e-cigs, they give off quite a big cloud. I mean, I've been...
Oh, yeah. I've seen them on the road when somebody has a window down and, you know...
Absolutely. So it's not... And also we have to remember that some people have allergies to some of the constituents. I was in a vape shop not long ago, and you could try the products, and one of them had they have all kinds of different flavors. That's an important piece that we haven't touched upon,
right. mm-hmm.
which is attractive to kids. But I was in a shop recently, and it had nut flavor. And my kids are actually allergic to nuts. And I said to the person, what if you're allergic to nuts? And they said, well, you shouldn't use the nut flavor. I said, no, but that's not my point. What about the people around that person? Now, the truth is, I haven't heard of a case of somebody having an allergic reaction, but it just raises the point that you shouldn't be able to vape in workplaces and public places.
Yeah.
And generally, you're not.
I mean, wouldn't you need a real nut as part of the ingredients for someone who's allergic? But I get your point.
Yeah.
But what you're saying. So, Erica, let me ask you. I mean, we're mostly focusing on young people here and not getting started in the first place. How should parents talk to their children about vaping? Or juuling. Well, now we learn that there's another verb out there.
Exactly. I mean, I think, first of all, parents need to be aware about these products, and they need to recognize that this is not the cigarette that they may have experimented with in high school, that these products contain chemicals that cause irreversible lung damage and alter their brains. And I think it's also important to point out that especially Juul, but as Jennifer mentioned much earlier, virtually all e-cigarettes do contain nicotine, even those that claim they don't. I think there's also a real important part about continuing to educate kids about how the industry, the tobacco industry, which makes a lot of these products, continues to manipulate kids. And I think Jennifer can speak to that even better.
Jennifer?
Absolutely. So the tobacco industry doesn't see our kids, the next generation, as the future leaders of this country. They see them, in fact, as replacement customers, replacements to those that die every single day from their deadly product use. So, you know, just in fact, looking at the manipulation and the targeting ads, and these ads are working. So, you know, extremely concerning, for
well,
sure.
How are e-cigarettes, how are they marketed?
Sure. So, you know, a lot of the old glamour tactics, really trying to hone in on identifying with a crowd, social acceptance, also about, you know, kind of free will. I would also say that the flavor marketing, and this is something that Dr. Foltz had alluded to earlier, is the flavoring is extremely appealing to kids. We're talking fruit flavors, chocolate, bubble gum. I mean, how many grandpas out there do you know sit on their rocking chair and have bubble gum, you know, e-cigarette? So it definitely is very appealing to our youth, and we have to stop this from hitting this generation and moving forward and really evolving into lifelong addiction.
DM, what about schools? I mean, what role, obviously, schools, parents, everyone has done a really nice job over the last 30 years, probably even longer, of letting people know the dangers of cigarette smoking, of combustible cigarette smoking. And as a result, we heard the numbers earlier, it's way down amongst young people and adults. What about this? I mean, are the schools talking about this? And I don't know whether you have knowledge of what the schools are doing, but I'm just curious of what you have heard about it.
We spend a lot of time in the schools with the student assistance program and also just educating the school staff and also students. So we do have a lot of school staff that ask us to do presentations to give them information so they are prepared when someone comes up and has a problem with e-cigarettes. We also make sure that we educate them on how we can help a kid stop using, and also, like I said before, intervention, where we have groups where we will educate them about vaping and what are the negative effects of vaping and why they should not start. So I think that schools are very vigilant of getting the word out to kids that this is not a thing they want them to do.
Do we follow the same path that we did with combustible cigarettes? I mean, will it take that kind of effort to make young people realize this is something you should think twice about?
Yes, I think that we still use those type of efforts. We also do evidence-based programming to more or less not only just talk about vaping, but also help kids make better decisions.
You said that when someone comes in and realizes they have a problem with vaping, I don't know, I kind of get the sense that there aren't a lot of people who describe themselves that way, that they feel, I mean, just like our earlier caller, feels that he did the right thing in getting away from combustible cigarettes and that now he sees no impact on his body physically from vaping. I'm just wondering how many people actually come out and say, well, I have a vaping problem and I need some help.
We don't get a lot of people saying that, and I think that's because it has been such a record of people saying this is the alternative to smoking cigarettes. This is going to help you stop smoking. This doesn't have as many chemicals. So I think that's why we get a lot of people that aren't saying I have a problem with vaping.
So there's mixed messages. So let's do a little bit of history, and I'm not pointing to you because, doctor, because you're the oldest, other than me, in
Thanks,
the room.
Scott.
But I know. I just wanted to talk a little bit about history because I know you do research into this. But just what we were talking about, what worked in discouraging people from smoking cigarettes, and what do you think will work to discourage people from, young people especially, from vaping?
Well, I mean, the things that have worked are, first of all, public health education, mass media programs, like the excellent work that our colleagues on the panel have been doing, like the American Lung Association does. And that's what FDA are actually about to start, a public health education program targeted at young people to educate them about the fact that e-cigarettes are not harmless. They are addictive. I hope that one of the things they'll emphasise that people don't think of, particularly young people, is that if you get addicted to a nicotine product as a teenager, and you might perceive it, it's less harmful than cigarettes. But a 17-year-old young woman who probably in the next 10 years is going to want to have a family and things. If you're addicted to nicotine at that point, that's going to have a big impact on your unborn child. And that's a big impact. Nicotine is harmful to the development of the fetus. So never mind it doesn't have the other thousands of chemicals. The nicotine itself is an important inhibitor of development and development of the lungs. So that's a very important thing that you don't think of when you're 17. But when you're 27 and you're still vaping, that could be a problem.
Do we have any numbers or any kind of research as to whether young men... more young men or more young women, or is it a 50-50 split of who vapes?
It seems to be more young men, and it seems to be actually more common in white kids as well. But I think we have to... I'd like to kind of look a little bit at the big picture, because we're focusing just now because of that recent news story on the negative, and there is a problem with the number of young people doing it. But I want to make sure we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I believe that electronic cigarettes, if appropriately regulated, could produce a really big public health benefit, and they could potentially completely replace the cigarette industry in this country. They are actually under the jurisdiction of the FDA right now. They do regulate them. FDA are funding research, they're collecting the data. That's why they know that it's increasing. We just completed a large trial of e-cigarettes for reducing smoking, and we're about to start another one that's funded by NIH and by FDA. So they are on this, and I think they're trying to kind of do it carefully, and it's a new thing, so we don't have all the data yet, but I believe it has the potential to completely replace cigarettes, which would be a great thing.
Let's go to Dan in Harrisburg. Dan, you're on the air.
Yes. This is the second or third program I've heard on NPR about vaping specifically, probably in the last 6 weeks. And I guess I'm really struggling. I'm 31 years old, and I'm struggling to understand why it seems like we're attacking the vaping industry so hard right now. I don't personally vape or smoke, but it feels like we haven't fixed the smoking problem. People of my generation grew up being educated around the harm of smoking cigarettes, and I have many friends that picked it up anyway. So it feels like we're going after the shiny object instead of, like, really, we haven't solved the first problem, and now we're going after a new one.
All right, Eric, thank you very much. Erica Swart, what about that?
Well, I completely understand that and completely agree that cigarette use remains a major problem in our country. But we also have to recognize that that FDA has to address the problem and the tobacco product that is most commonly used by kids right now. One out of five kids is using a tobacco product, whether that's a cigarette, an e-cigarette, or a cigar, as I mentioned before, which especially among these high school boys. But what we know works to reduce cigarette use is happening, and the policies that we need, whether it's smoke-free laws, whether it's higher tobacco taxes, whether it's these counter-marketing campaigns that FDA is launching or that states can do, helping smokers quit, Those policies need to be implemented consistently by both federal and state officials. And as we look across the variety of maps that the Lung Association creates to demonstrate where these policies have been put into effect, it's happening extraordinarily unevenly across the country. And what we're seeing as really great policies in 27 states for comprehensive smoke-free laws, for example, are not being done in another 33 states. Yeah. And what needs to happen are these policies that we know work, including the recent addition, I think, of raising the minimum age of sale to 21. Needs to happen in every state across the country if we're ultimately going to get a handle on reducing tobacco use in general.
Let me take a phone call. Dave in Harrisburg is a vape shop owner. Dave, I wish I had more time. I only have about a minute left. I kind of was hoping someone would call in, for a vape shop owner. Go ahead.
Just three quick things since we have such limited time. Number one, the flavors that people have discussed, as a vape shop owner that has owned shops for 5 years, the flavors carry a very significant role in adult smokers being able to fully transition off of cigarettes to vapor products. Number two, as a responsible shop owner, we absolutely recognize and are regulated by the federal government that it is illegal to sell our products to anyone under the age of 18. And lastly, I've heard comments about the chemicals within the e-cigarettes. And Dr. Foltz can attest to, while absolutely there are certain chemicals contained in e-cigarettes, the levels of which they are received when using an e-cigarette are significantly different than using a traditional combustible tobacco product.
Hey, Dave, I'm glad you called in. Thank you very much for your call. I wish we had more time. I want to thank all four of you for being with us today. It's something that obviously one caller mentioned that he's heard three stories on NPR. It's something we're going to be paying a lot of attention to. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Smart Talk on WITF, your home for NPR News and all things regional. I'm Scott Lamar. Welcome back to Smart Talk, the end of Smart Talk, and WITF's fall fundraising campaign. WITF's multimedia news director, Tim Lambert, joins us. Tim?
And good morning, Scott. Great to be back.
Oh, I walked away. I thought
Was I supposed to keep talking?
Yeah,
I thought you were going to, engage in more conversation with me. This is Smart Talk, right? We're supposed to have a conversation.
I will engage in conversation, but I was checking out our tote board here to see where we stand right now. So
we're close. We're close to the goal of $1,000 for the show. I think if you update it, that'll show that. But right now, we are about $40,000, under $40,000 to go to reach our overall goal of $78,000 by the end of day Friday. Of course, if we wipe out that $39,770 by the end of day today, the pledge drive is over and we resume normal programming for the rest of the week. So it all depends on you making that decision right now to be a part of this public media organization and supporting it financially with that contribution of $5 a month, $10 a month, $20 a month, maybe $100 a month at WITF.org or by calling 1-800-233-9483. You can also make a one-time gift of $60, $75, maybe $365 to signify that you listen to WITF every day of the year. And you can do that by going to WITF.org.
And if for a gift of at least $60, there are Smart Talk mugs.
Yeah,
out there.
Those awesome orange Smart Talk mugs.
I saw you look over there. It's not.
I thought it was there. It's just natural. It was there for like a year, and now they finally took it out when I talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's this bright orange. Katie Meyer said this morning that she thinks you can see it from space.
Yes.
Actually, from the space station, I have seen it. It is that bright. Yeah.
It's pretty bright. Yeah. It's pretty bright. But, Smart Talk is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year, next month. So we hope that you'll make that contribution of $60 in support of the all-the-year service that Smart Talk has brought to this community in discussing issues of importance, taking a look at breaking news when the situation warranted, and really delving into things and presenting a lot of different perspectives you might not hear anywhere else. So if you feel like Smart Talk has been a part of your life for the last decade or maybe only the last 10 months. Make that contribution of $60 or more and pick up that Smart Talk mug as a welcome gift at WITF.org or 1-800-233-9483.
Looking for the Smart Talk audience to come through, 1-800-233-9483. And again, that number is different than the Smart Talk number to call in or go to WITF.org. Tim, thank you very much for being with
us. Anytime, Scott.
Coming up on tomorrow's program, there's a new poll out from Franklin and Marshall talking about the governor's race. Also, the latest in our battling app opioids series that comes up on tomorrow's program.